17. 2 Samuel 17. The title of the message tonight is Ahithophel Defeated by a Simple Prayer. Ahithophel Defeated by a Simple Prayer. Often, as we've gone through 1 Samuel and now we're in 2 Samuel, we would come to a verse or two, and between those two verses, there may be a 20 or 30 year gap in time. We don't have any such gap in the message last Sunday night connecting the message to tonight. You got to remember that chapter divisions were not in the original manuscripts. Chapter divisions and verses were added so that you and I would be able to find passages quickly. But they were not in those scrolls to begin with. And so I want us to look at the verse that I closed with last week. And then I want us to forget the chapter verse or chapter divider. And I want us to go right into the text of tonight. Verse 23, and the counsel of Ahithophel, which he counseled in those days, was as if a man had inquired at the oracle of God. So was all the counsel of Ahithophel, both with David and with Absalom. Moreover, Ahithophel said unto Absalom, and he goes into what he wants to do. Now, I want you to remember, it seems like that I'm saying this a lot these days. God is always in control. He never has a time when he is anxious. He never has a time when he thinks he needs to speed up or slow down. Everything that he does is on his timetable. We don't have to worry about the Lord getting scared. We don't have to worry about fear because that's not part of God's nature. But he is in control of everything. He controls my life. He controls your life. He controls this country. He controls this universe. It's a fascinating thing to me just thinking about all of the moving parts that take place in the universe in which we live. Now, we're not going to turn this into a science fair project tonight with the sun and the moon and the stars and the Milky Way and all of that stuff. But suffice to say, God put that together and it operates on time. The planets move in the speed that God wants them to move. And so, is it any wonder that the affairs of men, God has his way with those also? I don't think it's a surprise. As we have gone through these previous chapters over the last maybe 3 years, we have seen certain things that God has said was going to be. Now, you may be like me, you may not be, you may be better than me. But if I'm not careful, I'll have a short memory when it comes to what God has done. And so I want us to just kind of think back how we got to where we're at tonight. If you were to go back, and we're not going to go, I'm just going to tell you what these passages say. If you want to jot them down, you can go back and you can do it later. But in 1 Samuel chapter 28, Saul is told that he is going to have the kingdom taken for him. It will be rent or torn from him. And it will be given to David. And what does that mean? That means that David is now going to be the king as long as he lives. So we see that the kingdom has been given to David. In that passage, it did not say anything about David's life. It did not say anything about David's sin. It said the kingdom's taken from Saul because of his disobedience, and it's going to be given to David. 2 Samuel, the book that we are in now, chapter 3, verse 18. It says that by David I will save my people. So we have that promise. Chapter 5, verse 2. God said that David will feed my people and be their captain. You have chapter 7, verses 12 through 16. Basically, it says this, that David's throne is going to be established forever. But yet tonight, we have David and he's not on his throne. We have David and he is not even in Jerusalem. He is barely to the Jordan River. He has not crossed over the Jordan yet, but that's where he's headed. And so when we see where we're at tonight, do we forget what God said? I hope that we don't. I hope that we will remember that when the Lord speaks, you can count on it. And so you and I, we need to just remember that. And so when I look at our text tonight, all of a sudden David's life seems to be in a little more peril. For a while, maybe a day or so, he's left. There's been people that have been coming as he's gone down through the Kidron Valley. He's gone back up the Mount of Olives. He's crossed over, and now they are there close by the Jordan River. He's tired. And so Ahithophel, the man who was the smartest man in the country, the man that everybody else looked to, Ahithophel, he steps up with a four-point plan. So the first thing that I want you to remember tonight is this, that no matter how smart the man, God can overcome that. I guess that would be the best way to say that. 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 25 says, "Because the foolishness of God is wiser than men, and the weakness of God is stronger than men." Verse 27 of that same chapter, "But God hath chosen the foolish things of the world to confound the wise, and God has chosen the weak things of the world to confound the things which are mighty." So you've got the foolishness of God is greater than the wisdom of men. The weakness of God is stronger than the strongest of men. And so keep those verses in mind as we look at Ahithophel and his four-step plan, basically to destroy David. Look with me at verse 1. "Ahithophel said unto Absalom, Let me now choose out 12,000 men, and I will arise and pursue after David this night. And I will come upon him while he is weary and weak-handed, and will make him afraid. And all the people that are with him shall flee, and I will smite the king only. And I will bring back all the people unto thee. The man whom thou seekest is as if all returned, so all the people shall be in peace." So what you've got is you've got four things that Ahithophel is desiring to do. The first thing, I want to say this, is that the plan is a brilliant plan. You know, when somebody is tired, they can't think straight, they can't fight right because they're exhausted. I remember years ago I heard the story about a guy that was playing football. He was an offensive lineman, and the defensive lineman was just absolutely, the guy in front of him was just killing him. You know, I mean, it was just every play. This guy was getting pushed into the background. He was getting pancaked. I mean, he was just getting killed. And finally, he came over to the sideline, and the coach grabbed him by the jersey and started shaking him and said, "Listen, man, you got to be positive that you can beat this man. You got to be positive. You got to be positive. positive. He's trying to jack him up a little bit. And the guy looked at the coach and said, "Coach, I'm positive he's beating my brains out. In other words, I can't do anything about this." And so David is tired. Ahithophel knows this. He's a seasoned counselor. He probably has military experience. And so we see the first thing is that Ahithophel wants to personally run the mission. In verse number 1, what does it say? He says, "I will arise and pursue after David this night." In other words, let's don't let up. Let's keep the pedal to the metal, so to speak. Let's go get him now before he gets farther away. Let me take 12,000 men and I'll go get him tonight. Now, one of the things that I want you to notice in these first verses here, I want you to notice Ahithophel and the words that he uses. He uses a pronoun, I. Verse 1, "I will arise." Verse 2, "I will come upon him." Verse 2, the latter part, "I will smite the king only." Verse 3, "I will bring back all the people." So what you've got is you've got a man and he is consumed with getting David. It seems as though that this has been a festering sore in this man's life. And again, whether you believe that he was Bathsheba's grandfather or not, there was something that happened to cause Ahithophel to turn his back on David. And now he personally wants to take 12,000 men and he wants to chase him as though he is some type of prey to be had. He wants to kill him. And so we see that stage or step one of this first portion of our passage tonight. He wants to take immediately a small group and go get him. Number two, the plan is to strike while David and his men are tired and weary. And he says, fear will overcome them and they will be routed. Look with me at verse 2, the first part. It says, I'll come upon him while he is weary and weak-handed, and I will make him afraid, and all the people shall flee. In other words, I'll have them so scared that they will leave him and he'll be by himself. He's probably right about that. I mean, when people are discouraged, they have really unnatural fear. There have been times when I have had fear. Sometimes I have crazy dreams. Now, I'm not talking about a biblical dream like a Daniel had, all right? I'm talking about just nutty dreams, all right? Somehow I dreamed the other night that I was sitting on the top of a pole that was about 300 feet high. And I'm up there and all I'm thinking is, how am I going to get down? And all of a sudden the pole begins to move back and forth. And I can feel in my stomach, I can feel it beginning to churn. And I'm just like, what am I going to do? And you know you're dreaming, but it's like, maybe not. I don't have any idea how I got up on that pole. I just know that all of a sudden I'm on a pole. And then it's as though that it tilted so far that off I went. And then I made myself wake up, as the old saying goes, before you kill yourself. All right? Well, when I think about those types of things, you can wake up scared. I'll tell a story on Buddy, my friend that is with us in December, does the orphans and that kind of stuff. We were in high school. One night he has a dream, and he tells me about it the next morning, and I said, Well, why were you so scared? He said, somebody was trying to get me. And he said, and I started trying to scream, but nothing would come out. And he said, I've got my mouth open and I'm trying to yell, but it's just silent. And the more I tried to yell, the less I could yell. It was just, I've got my mouth open, but nothing. And he said, it terrified me to death. Well, when you're tired, you can think all kind of crazy things in dreams. But there are times when you are tired physically, and you're just as not as sharp as you are when you're fresh. I know that I'm a lot better from about 6 o'clock in the morning to about 3 in the afternoon than I am from 3 to 5. Something about 3 to 5, it's like, you know, now 5 o'clock, I'm back. But with that one little spot there, that's tough. And so as he gives this plan, he knows they're tired. He knows they're weary. And he wants to attack tonight. Well, what's the next thing? He says, I only want David to be executed. Look at the latter part of verse 2. And I will smite the king only. The word smite there is a Hebrew word which means destroy. I will destroy him and him alone. And so this shows the vindictiveness of Ahithophel. Now, Ahithophel is probably older than David. He may be 15, 20 years older than David is at this particular time. But he knows something. He knows that David is not the man that he used to be. He knows that David is not the warrior that he used to be. Now he's gotten probably a little bit soft. That's what he's probably thinking. So it's like, even though I'm older, if I've got 12,000 and he's only got a few thousand, we'll kill him. I'll run everybody else off and he'll be the one that dies. I'll destroy him. And then the fourth thing that he says in his plan, he says, verse 3, I will bring back all of the people unto thee. In other words, I'm going to do this. Now, when you read all of the I's, the four times in our three verses, the four times he says, I will, do any of you remember anything about that in another book of the Bible? Not Job. What'd you say, Dave? That's not the one I'm looking for. Yes, ma'am. That's exactly right. Satan, I think it's Isaiah 14, six times, what did he say? I will, I will, I will. I will be like the Most High. All right? So you've got the I wills of Satan. Is it any wonder that this man that has lost all focus is now spouting the same words? In other words, he is so lifted up with pride, he's so lifted up with vindictiveness, that it just does not matter. The hatred is so great. And just as Satan was lifted with pride and God cast him out of heaven, Ahithophel is lifted with pride. And he talks about everything that he's going to do. That's important in what's going to happen next. So, everybody is impressed. Look at verse 4. And the saying pleased Absalom well, and all the elders of Israel. Well, why would they not be pleased? Ahithophel, the oracle of God. He's the one that just said this. Man, that's a fantastic plan. But then I want you to notice the unseen hand of God. Look at verse 5 and 6. Then said Absalom, call now Hushai the Archite, and let us hear likewise what he saith. And when Hushai was come to Absalom, Absalom spake unto him, saying, Ahithophel has spoken after this manner. Shall we do after his saying? If not, speak thou. Do you remember just last Sunday night? Hushai, when he was talking to Absalom, was being questioned by Absalom. How come you aren't with your friend David? How come, you know, weren't you guys friends? How come you're not with him? And what does he say? Oh, king, live forever. Oh, king, live forever. And basically he begins to stroke his ego a little bit. Absalom knows that he has been faithful to David. Why would he call this man after the oracle of God has just given a brilliant plan to take David out? Hushai is just somebody that was a leftover from David's regime. But yet something in the heart of Absalom said, let's hear from Hushai. And so he calls him. So why would Absalom do that? The heart of the king's in the hand of the Lord. Well, what about these other men? They go along with it too. They think, yeah, okay, all right, let's do that. And so we think, the hand of God? Well, I just got finished giving you what those verses said in 1 Samuel 28, 2 Samuel 3, 5, 12, I think it is. I gave you those verses. Now, have you ever heard anybody say that Christianity today is failing? Christianity today is on its way out. The Islamists are multiplying so much more faster than the Christians are. Could be. But can I tell you that the church will never completely go away? It absolutely will not. Now, there could come a time when this church will not exist. I think of some of the churches that I knew when I was just a young man. The church that my folks were faithful in mainly was called the Durant Avenue Baptist Church. It was on Durant Avenue, and on Sundays, that's where we went when I was just a kid. Do you know that church is not there anymore? It's a Masonic lodge. That's what the church is today. But can I tell you that just because that church is not where it used to be, that means that all churches are going by the wayside? That's not the case. You say, well, preacher, why do you believe that? I mean, don't you see the headlines? Yeah, I do. And every time I see the headline when it talks about the church is in decline, you always have to read into it, because it's usually the church that's in America or the church that's in Europe. But the churches that are in places like Asia, certain parts of Africa, Christians are being martyred. But Tertullian made this statement. He said, the blood of the martyrs is the seed of the church. And so the church in America, it may tank. It may have to go back underground. But ultimately, the church will not fail. You know why I believe that? Jesus said in Matthew chapter 16, verse 18, he said, I will build my church, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. If the church has got Jesus on its side, everything's good. One in America? May not be. But somewhere, somehow, with some group of people, there's going to be a church that is serving the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. And so, when we see that Saul Your disobedience caused me to rip the kingdom from you, and it's going to David. David, you're going to feed my people, and you're going to be their captain. David, your throne is going to be established forever. And so, is it any wonder that Absalom would ask this question? Hey, let's hear from Hushai. After the oracle of God has just spoken, can we not see God working in that situation? I find the working of God in my family just a beautiful thing. And I find that the more I observe this, the more joy I have, because I know that everything's good. Don't mean we don't have trouble. We have trouble just like you have trouble. Sometimes people think that preachers, they just don't ever have any problems. We have all kind of problems. I had a person tell me not long ago, said, man, we've been involved in this particular ministry, said 2 or 3 hours every day, we're talking to people here and there, said, I'd go nuts if I had to listen to it as much as you do. Well, the Lord is in control, and everything's good. And so we see that these people, they just said, hey, let's listen to Hushai. And so we see the unseen hand of God there. But then I want you to notice a man that's pretty quick on his feet. I want you to look with me beginning at verse 7. It says, Hushai said unto Absalom, the counsel of Ahithophel hath given is not good. Now I'm telling you right off the bat, he's stepping out there a little bit. Who is Hushai compared to Ahithophel? You know? I mean, that's almost like, are you going to listen to Moses? You're going to listen to Shimei? All right? Well, I'm listening to Moses. Well, he says the advice from Ahithophel is not good, but then he softens it a little bit and he says, at this time. And so he begins. And he appeals to four things. Now, you can say all you want about Hushai, and there's some commentators, they don't like the guy because he's a spy. But I mentioned last time or the time before about during times of war, things are different, right? And so we see that there are four appeals that he makes. First of all, he appeals to logic. Look with me at verse 8 and the first part of verse 9. For said Hushai, thou knowest thy father and his men, that they be mighty men, they be chafed. In other words, they're angered. And he gives an example of a bear, of a mother bear, robbed of her whelps, of her cubs in the field. Thy father is a man of war and will not lodge with the people. Behold, he is hid now in some pit or in some other place. You get the picture of the bear? I was sent a picture last week. I don't have any idea how this ended. There was a lumberjack that was gone up a tree. He had his chainsaw where he was limbing the tree high up, and all of a sudden he's looking down and underneath him a bear's climbing up the tree. And you see the lumberjack up here, there's no tree to jump to. He's just up this tree trunk about 40 feet and the bear's at about 20 feet coming up the tree. And the caption was, bad day for the lumberjack. And I'm thinking, yeah. And all I'm thinking is, how can I get turned sideways and get that chainsaw running? And when he puts his paw up there, I'm going to cut that thing off. You know what that's almost like? That's almost like being on a pole 300 foot in the air and falling off. All right? And so we see that there's a logic to this. Well, what's the logic? Well, it's obvious that David's a man of war. And you know what Hushai is doing? He is appealing to the memory that this man has of his father. Absalom's heard of, he's heard about Goliath. He's heard about the exploits of David. He knows that Jerusalem was captured by David and his men. He knows that. And so he says, your father, your dad is a man of war. He's experienced in fighting. You remember all those times when he fought the Philistines and he would kill them and he would fight on behalf of the people of God. Do you remember that? And he would remember that. And so then he goes on to say he won't be sleeping in the same place every night. Well, when you're on the lam, you don't sleep in the same place every night in case somebody said, hey, he was sleeping over so-and-so last night. Well, the next night, you don't stay at that same place. You go some other place. So he's telling him, hey, your dad knows all about this. He knows all these tricks. And so he appeals to logic. And then it says the only way that you basically can kill him is if you find him, and he's probably in a pit somewhere. He's hiding. He may be sleeping in the bottom of a dry well. He may be in the back of a cave. You know the story of Saul. And so he appeals to Absalom's logic. But then he appeals to his caution. Look at verse 9, the latter part, and verse 10. And it says, and it come to pass, when some of them be overthrown at the first, that whosoever heareth it will say, there is a slaughter among the people that follow Absalom. And he also that is valiant, whose heart is as a heart of a lion, shall utterly melt. In other words, he's saying, King, Ahithophel's great. But that plan he's giving you right now is just not a good time. He said, suppose they're out there waiting right now because they think, well, Absalom's going to send some troops. And you've got, they're there on one side of a ravine and on another side of a ravine. And the next thing you know, they're going to catch you in a crossfire and they're going to begin to kill you off and you'll have soldiers that'll die and the word will get back. Hey, Absalom, he took his men into a bloodbath. And so if you do that, you're going to get some criticism on that. And so there's something cautious there. And he goes on to say that when you start losing these men, those that are strong and those that have lion hearts, it's going to melt like wax inside of them. And so he appeals to caution. But then look with me at verse 11. He appeals to vanity. And I think to me, this may be the good selling point. I mean, if you're looking to sell, this is something that Hushai probably hit a home run with. Look at verse 11. Therefore I counsel that all Israel be generally gathered unto thee. Now keep this in mind, keep unto thee. Who was Ahithophel wanting to lead the raid? Himself. I will. But notice what Hushai does. He doesn't say, hey, let me do it. Oh, no. He says, I want you. You're the one that needs to let them be gathered. And I want you to gather people all from Dan to Beersheba. In other words, I want you to go to the very top of the country. I want you to send word to the very bottom of the country. And I want you to get people. And I want us to gather a huge, massive army. Why? Because when we take them out, we want them to be finished. And so he says in verse 11 that they're going to be gathered to you. And that thou go to battle in thine own person. In other words, you need to lead. So that when the victory is won, you get to praise. I mean, wouldn't it be a bad thing, King, if If you sent somebody else and they happened to win the victory, which I don't think they could, but if they happened to win the victory, and all of a sudden, everybody begins to praise this general, it would be better if you were leading. That way, all of the accolades and all the pomp and circumstance would be laid at your feet. And so, he appeals to his vanity. He goes on to say that we'll come upon him in some place. In other words, we don't need to do it tonight. Now, why is he saying things like that? Because he's trying to give David time to get away. He's trying to give him time. He knows everything that Ahithophel said is true. But this guy's quick on his feet. I mean, he's like that preacher I told you about last week in that cake. Well, that cake don't stay around our house long. All right? I mean, he was quick. And so, he says that there'll be some place when we'll find him. And then he says, we will light upon him as the dew falleth on the ground. And of him and all the men that are with him there, they shall not be left so much as one. Verse 13 goes on farther, says, moreover, if he be gotten into a city. In other words, if he happened to try to find a place to be safe behind the walls. He said, then all of Israel will bring ropes to that city and we will draw it into the river. That's the Jordan. In other words, if he finds some little fortress near that Jordan River, we'll take those ropes, we'll take those hooks, we'll throw them and we'll drag those walls down and we'll drag them all the way to the river. And he says, there shall not one small stone be found there. So he appeals to his vanity. Who doesn't like praise? Everybody likes praise. But when you're lifted with pride, Proverbs says, pride goeth before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall. So we have vanity that we have to guard against. You and I need to be very, very careful when we start reading our own press clippings. We get to thinking that, you know, hey, I'm as great as everybody's saying, and the next thing you know, you've fallen. We take heed lest we fall. There's a fourth appeal that he gave, and he appealed to vengeance. Now, he knows this man's nature. What does he know about him? Well, he knows that he has already killed a half-brother. He knows that. He knows that this man has such lack of respect for his father that he has gone up onto the palace rooftop and basically gone into a tent that has all of these standards and banners flying all over the place. And everybody knows what's happening. Everybody knows that he is in there and he is sleeping with those 10 concubines that David left to take care of the palace. He knows that. And so, he is a vengeful man. He wants the man that gave him life. He wants him dead. And so, Hushai plays on this. Look what it says in verse 12, the latter part. Talks about as the dew falleth on the ground, and of him and of all the men that are with him there shall not be one left so much as one. What did Ahithophel want to do? He wanted to kill David, leave everybody else along. Their leader would be gone. They'd have no reason not to fall in line under Absalom. But he appeals to Absalom's vengeful nature. You know, if you don't deal with all of them, there could be an insurrection. You know, if you don't take care of those that are following him right now, you know those loyalists that he's got? If you don't take care of them, they're coming back. My father-in-law used to have a saying when he was watching a movie on TV. It could be some type of espionage where that you'd have a spy, you know, and he would knock one of them out. And right out of his mouth, he would say, "You better go ahead and kill him because he's coming back. Just go ahead and kill him. He's coming back." Well, you've got vengeance. And the thinking is, Hushai is saying, "Hey, you need to kill these guys. You need to get rid of them." And so there's vengeance that's there. He's not just content with killing David. He wants to get rid of the whole bunch. And so we see that there is an appeal. Now, we've seen the plan that Ahithophel had. We see how that Hushai, who was a nobody, has now been quick on his feet, and he began to feed all these things to Absalom. Now look with me at verse 14. And I want you to see God one more time. "And Absalom and all the men of Israel said, 'The counsel of Hushai, the Archite, is better than the counsel of Ahithophel.'" Those words have never been uttered in Israel. Ahithophel's counsel, it's the very oracle wisdom of God. But yet something in these men's minds, and it's not just the wannabe king Absalom, but it's the guys that just a few minutes before have said, "Oh, that's a great plan that Ahithophel just gave us." But now in just a matter of minutes, the script's flipped. And they go, "Hushai's advice is better than Ahithophel's." And so, how does all of this happen? Well, I want us to go back to one verse, and I want you to see an answer to prayer that God gave to David in our passage tonight. I want you to look with me at 2 Samuel 15, and I want you to look at verse 30. Excuse me, 31. "And one told David, saying, 'Ahithophel is among the conspirators with Absalom.' And the prayer out of David's lips immediately says, 'O Lord, I pray thee, turn the counsel of Ahithophel into foolishness.'" David prayed that prayer two chapters ago. But now, as we come to our passage, what happens? The counsel was not foolish, but Absalom, who was lifted with pride, chose the foolish counsel above the wise counsel that had been given. And so we see that hand of God one more time. Now, often we live our lives and we think, well, we're just living, you know, ordinary, mundane type lives. You know, we've got folks and they've got babies and they're changing diapers and they're, you know, they're doing this and they're sending their kids to school and they got all these things going on, and we don't really think about anything being special. But those threads that we have in our lives, God is weaving those things together. When you read the life of David, now we can read it and we know what the Bible says, and so therefore we can go, "I can't believe he don't believe the Bible." Well, that's because we know the end. But what about our own lives? You know, if we can trust God for eternity, we ought to be able to trust him with everything else. And so, we're beginning to pick up some steam. Next time I think we're going to get to the point to where Ahithophel sees that his counsel was not taken. And because his counsel was not taken, he knew that Absalom was probably going to fail, because he knew that if they gave David time to prepare, Absalom could not win. They had to catch him when he was tired. They had to catch him when his men were tired. Because if he ever gave David a chance to rest, he knew what a tactician David was. And he sees that he has been rejected with his counsel. And then we will see what he does in his own life. Don't want to let it out of the bag, but if you read ahead, you'll find it. Let's stand together. Prayer's a pretty big deal, folks. David goes, "Oh God, turn that counsel of Ahithophel into foolishness." And God answered prayer and made that happen.